Chris Jericho joins us on Sports Byline. WWE star who is known for his over-the-top rock star persona, dubbed the Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla. And he is a six-time world champion, having won the WWF Championship once, the WCW World Championship twice, and the World Heavyweight Championship three times. A multi-talented guy, Jericho, he became the lead vocalist of the band Fozzy, and he also competed on Dancing with the Stars, and he has written a book that I'm going to recommend, and we're going to make a selection of the month on the Sports Byline Book Corner. It's called The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea. How did you come up with the title, Chris?
Well, I mean, this is actually the third book that I've written, and when the first two books did really good and they asked me to do a third book, I was thinking, like, do I really need a third autobiography in my early 40s? Like, Ernest Hemingway has one autobiography, and I have three, you know? And and the reason why these books work is because I never really take myself too seriously. I understand what I'm doing is just a dream that I had when I was a kid. It's not the hardest job in the world as far as when you're actually doing it. So I always like to try and add a little bit of humor behind all the books that I have. And a few years ago when I was in the WWE, I was claiming to be the best in the world. But at what, I have no idea when it comes to real life. I am the best in the world at something, but when I figure that out, I'll let you know.
You know, I always understand that people become with influences early in their life. In your case, you grew up in the state of New York, and your dad was a professional hockey player. He played with the New York Rangers. What are the early influences on you?
Well, it's actually not really kind of right. I was born in New York when my dad played for the Rangers, but I actually grew up in Winnipeg, Canada, which is, as you know, it's a very hardy part of the country, and it gets to minus 40, minus 50 degree weather. And I think I grew up very, very tough as a result. And that's physically and mentally, because when it's that cold, you know, if you're walking outside of your house, you're basically taking your life in your hands. And I think that's one of the reasons why I always had the tenacity and the courage and the one-mindedness to go for whatever it was that I wanted to do. Because when I was a kid, I wanted to be in a rock and roll band, and I wanted to be a wrestler. Those are the two things that I wanted to do. This is what I wanted to make my living on. And people thought I was insane wanting to do one of those things, and never mind both. Nobody has done that before, and I'm sure people thought Arnold Schwarzenegger was crazy when he said he wanted to be the biggest bodybuilder and the biggest movie star of all time. So once in a while, if you have enough, if you have enough tenacity and you believe in yourself and have enough heart and have enough goals, you can make it happen. You know, just follow those dreams. And that's kind of what I always did, because for whatever reason, these are the two things that I wanted to do, and I was going to, you know, by hook or by crook, make it happen.
What was it about Owen Hart that grabbed your attention?
I think a couple things. One, I grew up in Winnipeg, like I said, and when I was watching, you know, WWF at the time, Hulk Hogan and Ricky Steamboat, it seemed like those guys were on another planet, because I didn't really know where New York City was. I mean, I hadn't been there in years. I didn't know where Dallas was or what Chicago was or Los Angeles. But I knew Calgary because I'd been there, because it was like 12 hours away from Winnipeg. And Owen worked for Stampede Wrestling, which was his family business. And he was very agile in the ring, acrobat, and just everything that I really enjoy about wrestling, because I wasn't a big guy, you know, and neither was he. But he proved that you could go out there and be the champion and do all of these high-flying, exciting things. And the fact that he was in Calgary, a place that I knew existed and actually knew how to get there, just made him a lot more attainable to me and just made him a lot more relatable.
I know your first experience with a wrestling promotion was when you acted as part of the ring crew for the first tour of the newly opened Keystone Wrestling Alliance promotion. Is working with wrestling at a young age and at that particular time a little bit like running away and joining the circus?
Yeah, of course it was. And that's what I'm saying. Like right now you're talking to Chris Jericho, six-time WWE champion, all the pomp and circumstance. But when I first decided I wanted to get into wrestling, you know, in the early 90s, you might as well said I was going to run away to go to the circus to become a sword swallower or a mime or something like that. You know, it was just like, there's no way, you're way too small, and how are you supposed to do that? You're never going to make it happen. And that was my point, is that, you know, I didn't know how I was going to do this. How does a 15-year-old kid from the middle of the north, the prairie land in Manitoba, decide he wants to be a wrestler, decides he wants to be in a rock and roll band? And how do you do that when you do decide? So, I mean, there was always a lot of resistance and a lot of, you know, how you're supposed to do this. And I just went about it the only way I could. I knew there was this little company. My dad knew the guy who was the promoter and got me a job on the ring crew. And that's kind of how it all started. You know, you get your foot wet. It's like anything else. You got to start somewhere and build your way up the ladder. And I was fortunate enough to get that job doing the ring crew because I learned a lot right off the bat about what wrestling was and what it wasn't. It wasn't as glamorous as I expected it to be. And that's what you learn when you get into show business in all areas. That the moments where you're, you know, on TV or in the glory positions are great, but it's usually the other 23 and a half hours of the day that you have to fill in that you don't go crazy from all the trials and tribulations you have to deal with.
There were a couple guys that really gave you early pointers in your career, and that was Catfish Charlie and Caveman Broda. Tell me a little bit about these two guys.
Oh, man, I mean, it's funny, the stuff that you're talking about, it's all stuff that I had in my first book, which was like years and years and years ago, but just local guys that never really made it, that were just doing this tour, you know, this northern tour, and I think one of them is from Winnipeg, one of them is from, like, Minneapolis or something like that, and, you know, like I said, it was like watching the movie The Wrestler before the movie The Wrestler came out, guys that had this dream that never had achieved it and were still holding on, or guys that were just doing it kind of as weekend warriors, or guys that had passed their prime and were, you know, had no other way to make their income, so they were still, you know, wanting to do wrestling in as many high school gyms and as many armories as you could. There's nothing wrong with that on the way up, but I just found that, you know, on the way down, I decided early on I would never want to get to that point, get to that position. So, you know, you learn a lot of lessons when you're that young, and like I said, it really kind of opened the curtain and showed what the real world of pro wrestling, especially on the small level, really was all about.
I'm going to date myself a little bit here because I know this is a part of the history of wrestling, but as a kid, I used to go visit my grandparents in Parkersburg, West Virginia. I'd work in the city park selling popcorn and Coke at various sporting events, and I remember when the wrestlers came through town, it was Gorgeous George and George Steele and others like that, and how chaotic it was to be able to watch it as I'm selling soft drinks and popcorn.
Yeah.
Take me back to October 2nd, 1990, Moose Hall and Ponoka, Alberta.
Well, I mean, you know, it was my first match, and it was, like you said, the Ponoka Moose Hall, which is pretty much is what it sounds. It was like some kind of little veterans hall that some, I don't know, local, you know, Rotary Club was putting on a wrestling show or whatever it was, and that's where I had my first match, and there's probably 100 people there, but I remember going out there, and I think I got a reaction of some kid. I dropped an elbow on somebody, and some kid went, "Do it again." And I said to the kid, "Do you want me to do it again?" And the kid said, "Yeah." And I just, like, I felt like, oh my gosh, like, I'm the master of puppets. All these kids are super excited to see me. And it just felt like, I felt like Hulk Hogan or something like that in the midst of, you know, this 100 or so people. But, you know, that's the experiences that you have. Like I said, when you're first starting out with, you know, anything, that you have this seemingly unattainable goal when you first try. I'm sure it's the same when you're a stand-up comedian. I know it was the same when I first started with my band, or even when I first did Dance with the Stars. I write about that in The Best in the World, about how, you know, here you are, champion of your top of your game, six-time world champion. You're out there with Emmy winners and, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard, boxing champions, and, you know, recording artists who have platinum albums on their walls, et cetera, et cetera. And all of you are busted right back down to Buck Private, where you're doing something for the first time ever and not really too sure if you're going to be any good at it. And, you know, training for Dancing with the Stars was just as hard as training for wrestling was, as far as, you know, the athleticism that you need and the tenacity that you need, and you really got to focus in on it, because it's no joke. I mean, you know, learning how to dance, you might think, oh, it's dancing, but actually try it for a day and you realize just how hard it is. And I think after that first show, I mean, the first dance I ever did in my life was the cha-cha-cha in front of 25 million people on Dancing with the Stars. And then when I was done, I didn't get torn apart by the judges, and people actually seem to enjoy it. And then you get the confidence from it, and then you start really focusing in, like, okay, now that I know I can do this, or at least I have aptitude at it, I know I can steamroll and really start making it good. And it was the same thing when I first started wrestling, first started with Fozzy or like Dance with the Stars, like I said. And that confidence is anything. Any athlete will tell you, when you get that confidence, you can go out there and beat anybody. If you don't have that confidence, it doesn't matter what you do, you're going to lose.
Chris, we only have about 30 seconds before we have to break here, but the name Jericho, it came from a music influence, right?
Yeah, there was a German metal band called Helloween, and their album was called The Walls of Jericho. And I had to think of a name like in 5 minutes one day before my first match. And I said, how about Chris Jericho? And they're like, all right, that's it, Chris Jericho. So I've had it ever since.
We're talking with Chris Jericho. His third book is out. It's called The Best in the World at What? I Have No Idea. And when we come back on the other side, we'll talk more about this book. And there's some interesting aspects of Chris's life in this book, especially about the feud with Shawn Michaels. Most wrestling fans know that. We carry a show on our network, which we started here, Wrestling Observer Live and Wrestling Observer Newsletter. And he was named a Wrestler of the Year 2 years in a row. Also, you heard him mention about Dancing with the Stars. I've always had a great appreciation for people that come out of their comfort level and then go in and do something that maybe they've never done before, especially the football players, because it's very easy to get embarrassed in front of millions and millions of people. And we'll talk with Chris about that as well. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on Sports Byline.